Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 56 of Classic Leap. My name is Tony. I'm here with my friend Scott. How you doing, Scott?
Dude, I'm doing awesome. Just back in the swing of things.
We are. We're here, episode 56, and we're going to be talking, as we always do, about the best of retro and modern gaming, as well as just random discussions that are on our mind about the gaming industry this week. So I'm excited to be back talking about games with my good friend Scott. We have an exciting show today. We have a couple friends on the show, as well as a really exciting interview. And our interviews just continue to get better, don't they?
Man, I know I say it every week, but I'm really excited about this one, just because this is, you know, a developer from a really, really big game that just came out. So it's really cool to have him on the show.
It is. It is really cool. And not only that, but just getting to talk about some things with some friends and some exciting new opportunities that have come to the front doorstep of Classic Leap and an exciting website that we're just pumped to be a part of. So why don't we get started with episode 56 and some comments. I think you have a couple comments to read, don't you, Scott?
I do. One is from our good friend Seb, who will actually be on the show here in just a second. Seb's the half-blind gamer. And he left a comment on episode 55 over at a new site that's going to be hosting some of our content. And Seb says, "Hey guys, great show. Really glad to see your podcast over here too. I'm also pretty excited about the Vita," talking about our discussion last week from the PS Vita and how excited we are about it. "I don't see myself getting it quickly after launch, but it does appeal to me more than the 3DS. He says, "It'd be funny if more people started naming character names for their kids. Now that everyone knows Robin Williams did it, it might actually start a trend. Just imagine a class full of Bonk, Daxter, Ganon, Sonic, Wario, Alundra. Boy, of course there'd be a little Blinky in the back." So, Seb, yeah, that would be weird. I don't know, Tony. We sparked a little bit of interest there with our discussion on what sort of names could we actually give our kids in real life that were video game inspired.
Yeah, I know. We got a couple comments about that. So it was a good discussion.
Yep.
And yeah, I still love that commercial. Great commercial.
It was awesome. And then another message that was sent to us actually was from Twitter, which is cool. We don't get a lot of stuff on Twitter that we read on air, but this one really stuck out to me. So definitely needed to bring it up. It was from our good buddy C-Bomb, who we haven't heard from in a while, so glad you're still listening, man. And he wanted to let us know that we can get all three Sly Cooper games on the PS2 for about $4 each, and they're all awesome, highly recommended. So everybody, Tony and I, we have no idea about Sly Cooper, but our listeners do, and everybody has rave things to say about it. So I don't know, Tony, if I find a really cheap PS2, it's getting to that point where people are starting to do yard sales all the time here. Maybe I might have to go around and look for PS2 with some Sly Cooper. I bet I could pick up all of that stuff for about 10 to 15 bucks.
Oh yeah, it's funny though. I've ran into about 4 PS2s at garage sales this summer, and they're priced at like $85. And these people are like, because they bought it for, you know, $200, $150 a couple years ago, and they think that, you know, they can rake in all this money. And I just look at them and walk away. Punks. So I'm looking for one for $10, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, from what people say, Sly Cooper, it's the way to go. So I need to check it out. PS2 is like that system that I just never played hardly at all. So
me either. One of my favorite PS2 games was the Two Towers hack and slash game that EA did for Lord of the Rings. That was awesome. So, Tony, you've got a comment, too, from a regular listener, right?
Yeah, VK, our good buddy from Bulgaria, wrote in, and he says, "You guys can't be more wrong about Sly Cooper. The Sly series started on the PS2 by Sucker Punch, who also developed the very unknown Rocket Robot on wheels for the N64, but are more known for the infamous series on the PS3. Sly is what put them on the map, and Sony published the game, and Sly became one of the three mascots for the PS2. The other two were Ratchet and Jack, who then teamed up for a crappy adventure on the PS3 called PS Move Heroes, which should have been called Heroes on the Move, as sort of a play on words. Also, the Sly series is a stealth 3D platformer, Kind of hard to explain without gameplay footage, but be sure you'll love the games. In fact, I might pre-order Sly 4 just because I love the original trilogy on the PS2.
Wow.
And I still hope they make a Sly game for the PSP so I can have it on the go. And I've been waiting for Sly 4 since 2005, so it better be a great game. So obviously, VK is a big fan of the Sly Cooper series as well.
Yep, so awesome. VK, thanks a lot for writing in. Tony, before we get to bringing on our guest to talk about a new site, Seb, and Critical Failure, did we want to cover the deal of the week this week, get that out of the way up front, and then get to some of the good stuff?
Sure thing. What does
All right.
j2games.com have for us this week?
J2games.com presents to us Chrono Cross for the PS1. Right now at j2games.com, you can get Chrono Cross for $9.99. And one thing that we have to mention, and we mention it every week, is that $9.99 is before you add the promo code CLEAT for Classic Leet. And when you enter this in at checkout, you get 20% off your total purchase. So right now, for roughly $10, $11, it's 10 and some change on j2games.com after shipping when using the promo code. You're looking at saving quite a few dollars on this game versus getting Chrono Cross on Amazon.com. For just the disc right now, Amazon's asking about $12 after shipping. And J2 Games has the excellent condition version with the jewel case and the manual for about a little over $10. So you're getting a lot more for quite a bit less, too. So this week, J2 Games presents a Chrono Cross for the PlayStation 1. Tony, I've never played that game. Have you ever dabbled with it at all?
Yeah, I have played it a little bit. I messed around with it for a while. Didn't finish it, but it's definitely quality RPG from Square and something you should check out. I know there's a lot of quality RPGs for the PlayStation 1, but this would be one you want to add to the collection. And so I think for $10, it's a good pickup.
You know, I'd like to ask any of our listeners that have an opinion. If you've played Chrono Cross and Chrono Trigger, which one do you like better? And tell us maybe a little bit as to why. So if you have played both or just one or the other and you have some thoughts about either one of those games, send us an email at classicleet@gmail.com and let us know your thoughts. We'll read it on the air and try to have a discussion about it.
For sure. And Scott, you and I we kind of have an exciting announcement this week for our listeners.
Yes.
We have been invited to be contributors on a brand new website called Glitched Out. And the URL for the website is glitched-out.com. And it's a site where a bunch of people, in the podcasting, blogging, playthrough, review realm of YouTube. It's a video content site where you can go and you can just see all of this great video content from all these great contributors. And Scott, we're just privileged to be a part of it, aren't we?
No question. I was really impressed with all the content that I was already familiar with, the people that were also signed up, but also there were some contributors on there I wasn't really familiar with and was really impressed with. So yeah, man, it's really, really cool to be a part of it. I'm looking forward to getting all of our content over there.
Yep, and we've
Moving,
invited.
that's only moving forward. I'm too lazy to put the old stuff up.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, moving forward, we're not going to lift everything up there. But we have invited a couple of the guys who, are just part of the team of getting glitched out together for just a quick 10-minute interview. We wanted you to listen to them and just listen to really their passion and their thoughts and ideas behind Glitched Out. So here's the interview. Check it out. Let us know what you guys think.
All right, everyone. We are here with Seb, the half-blind gamer, and Critical Failure from Tiger Claw Radio. And we're here to have them talk a little bit about a new site called Glitched Out. That's glitch-out.com. And it's a site that we're going to be a part of, but Seb and Critical Failure are kind of the muscle behind the Glitched Out engine that's starting. So I wanted to bring them on just to talk a little bit about the site. It's going to be a major source for our content as well as some other people as well. So Seb, you haven't been on the show before. Critical Failure, our audience is really familiar with you. So Seb, why don't you talk about yourself a little bit? You've written into the show a few times, and you know we it's really cool to have you on. So why don't you talk about yourself a little bit and your ideas behind Glitched Out?
Yeah, sure thing, man. Thanks for having me on, first of all. And well, I'm the half-blind gamer on YouTube. And I mainly started with CDI stuff, which is a ground very little covered in the gaming community because that system has a pretty bad rep for pretty good reasons, actually. But it's still fun to have a laugh with the thing. I also do modern reviews and recently decided to make a little site on which, well, video content providers as well as blog posters who just start out can just promote their own stuff a bit and get some more exposure, because it's very hard to get noticed in the, well, grand scheme of things as a new person starting out making video content, especially on YouTube. It's just very hard to really find the content that you want. So we wanted to create a site on which it's very easy to find just the gaming content which you want, be it pickups, reviews, or, well, Let's Plays, everything really. And if we don't have a category for it yet, we'll just make a new one. And that, well, that's basically the little introduction of the ideas behind Glitched Out, I think.
Okay, yeah. Well, something about Glitched Out that strikes me as interesting is that it's, you mentioned it's a site a lot of people just starting out can come promote themselves, and I toy around with in my head with that idea, and it would seem like in concept a site that does that would just turn into a bunch of people fighting for the spotlight. But the thing that makes it work is the design that you came up with, Seb. And the reason I say that is because people who have been using YouTube for longer than a year remember the alpha channels. And each time there's a change like that on YouTube, people are less and less happy with the design, and it becomes less and less intuitive for the users. So sites like Glitched Out are great for viewers, too, to find videos to watch in a way that's laid out just to show you videos, not to sell you advertising or to, you know, take you to other people who are just... There's no profiteering spirit involved in the design of this site, and that's one of the reasons why I really like it.
Yeah, it definitely has a good community feel to it. That was one of the things that had Tony and I really pumped about it.
Yeah, for sure. I like. I saw Scott exchanging emails with you guys about how to set up the account and all that, and then this was the first week I finally got a chance to go on there and mess around and upload some videos. And I told Seb, I was like, man, it's. You know, I finally had some time to play around with it the other night, and it was just awesome to be able to go to all the different shows on there and just check out people's content and everything. It was really easy to find everything. But yeah, more so, like Scott said, just to connect with the people that we already enjoy their content a lot, and just to see what the latest things are that they're putting out and be able to comment on their shows and all that. It has a really nice community feel to it. So was there a way that you guys came up with, you know, who to add to the show, or is there going to be a limit of shows that you add to allow people to post content?
Well, we just started out with going back and forth with making a list from who should we invite first, and this is just an idea, so would they actually listen or be interested in this thing? And, well, it kind of grew from there, and right now we're just open for pretty new content still, and just adding people to the site, because, well, you have a way to we categorize at one side from contributors, so you can pick from a contributor, see what shows they have, and on the other side from just the content which you want to see. So we can actually have a pretty big list of contributors and still make it manageable.
I think that was a really smart layout, because if you're just interested in watching, you know, just video reviews, just is your meat and potatoes, then sometimes it can be a bit ominous to look at an enormous list of contributors.
Yeah.
But this way you can just kind of see what's there.
That's right. And all the different categories that you had mentioned earlier, whether it's a Let's Play or a review or a podcast or something like that, at the bottom of the site, if anybody is checking it out right now, you'll notice that each different category right now has the most recent posts. What is it, like five roughly? The five most recent posts in each category.
Yes.
And then there's also a cool scrolling feature as well for any of the new video reviews. So Critical Failure was saying, it's really intuitive. It's something that I don't know. I'm pretty pumped about it. I think that you guys have a really good idea there.
Oh, thank you very much.
I love it when you say, like, us guys have a good idea. I feel like a fraud because I didn't really do anything with this website. Seb built it from the ground up. I think the most that I've done for this site is we had a meeting about the name, and I threw out, like, five names, and then they immediately went in the garbage.
Well, it took a really long while for the name to settle. We had a lot of names. And
What were some names you threw out?
I really have to get back in the sky blocks for that one.
I got you.
The trouble is I kept coming up with names that had like five words in them, like remember that game .com or
and we were trying to get a name that was a bit clever and not just another side with gaming in the title.
Yeah, clever is really difficult. That's because when you come up with a name, especially when you're registering the domain and stuff, you're stuck. You're really stuck with it.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. So cool. Well, guys, I just wanted to thank you very much for coming on. We're excited about the site, and Seb, you know, it's a pleasure to be a part of it, and you know, we're looking forward to any of the new contributors that you guys are getting as well. There were people that you guys have on there that I had never heard of before until checking out their content, and it's all been really good and really interesting. So I think good things are to come from Glitched Out. So is there anything else that we've missed, or anything else you guys want to add about the site?
Go to it.
Yeah, go to it, sign up, and just enjoy the site.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, Tony and I will be right back after a quick break.
All right, well, welcome back to episode 56 of Classic Elite. We do want to thank again Seb and Critical Failure just for being on the show and telling us a little bit about Glitched Out and what we can expect from that site. And if you're one of the listeners of our show, please go check that site out. It's amazing. It's fun. And like Scott said, I mean, I spent like probably an hour this week just going through some of the videos of people on there, checking out some different content from people I've never seen. So, yeah, it's definitely good to be a part of that site.
Absolutely. So, Tony, what do we have on the docket this week for modern gaming?
Well, we have an exciting interview coming up, and you know, that's awesome. But so I just wanted to cover a couple news points of things that stuck out to me from this week. From the modern realm and kind of a combination of modern and retro is that the Wii Shop Channel released a pretty exciting game this week for Virtual Console, and that was the SNES version of Final Fantasy III, which I don't know if you remember that. It's one of my favorites from the series, and I used to rent it from the video store. That was about as close as I had to owning it, and I still wish I had the original copy. You know, J2 Games had this in box for $6.99 at one time, and it sold out really fast because it's a huge deal. So, but yeah, the SNES version of Final Fantasy III, you can download it on the Wii Shop channel this week, and in my mind, a definite must-have. So I actually fixed up that Wii, and I'm going to be downloading that game hopefully soon. So nice. It's definitely one of those games I want to own. So, in other news in the modern realm, the Uncharted 3 beta released yesterday, being Tuesday of this week. I know you've never played Uncharted, Scott, but I promise, like, I will personally buy you the Uncharted series when you get a PS3 because it's some of the best gaming I've played. And
like, what kind of, like, is it? Like, how would you describe it?
It's like, I hate saying it this way, but it's like a Tomb Raider that works.
Okay.
And so it's like really good.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to get some flack for that comment. I do like the Tomb Raider series, but this game is just unreal, and it's real cinematic, and it has this way of like bringing you into this experience in the story where you just can't put it down.
Okay.
Like literally, it's like, you know, I don't read much, but for people who say they can't put a book down, it's kind of that same feeling. The story is just, I mean, for you're with this guy who can make these crazy jumps, Nathan Drake, and you know he's like the ultimate hip Indiana Jones type character.
Okay.
And you're always climbing, you're in firefights all the time, you're in melee attacks, but it's really cinematic, and they just do a great job of like going right in and out of a cinematic experience, and it's just really fun. And then in Uncharted 2, they added multiplayer, which you know that I'm not into competitive multiplayer at all. And I played this game for probably 2.5 months at least competitively online. It was, I mean, the multiplayer, it's third person, and it's just completely like in my mind different than your average multiplayer shooter. And it just, it feels like everyone kind of has a fighting chance, and it's just really fun. So,
you know, actually bringing that up, have you played the beta at all?
Yeah, I actually last night I couldn't sleep, and Vogue Nasty sent me over a code for it that he had won.
Nice.
And he got it for free because he's a PlayStation Plus member, and so I was able to download it, and I was actually up till 1 in the morning last night playing. Because it's the multiplayer beta, so it's only multiplayer.
Yeah.
So it's basically just competitive multiplayer. But that's the cool thing, is Sony did a brilliant thing. They gave everyone free 30 days of PlayStation Plus as coming back to...
once they got back online, right?
Yeah, the Welcome Back program.
Yeah.
And so it was genius, really, because I'm sure that they lost some people when they were offline for a month. And so it was genius to say, okay, we're going to give them Uncharted 3 beta access for free if you have PlayStation Plus. So literally you can sign up for the free 30 days of PlayStation Plus, get access to the Uncharted 3 beta, and just go and just have a great time. And you can level up to like level 25. I'm still level 1 or 2 because I haven't played very much. But yeah, it's awesome. And I just wanted to talk about a couple things I really liked about the beta that the game had improved in over Uncharted 2 so far.
Cool.
The first thing is that there's this bonus called Power Plays, which, so if like you're on two teams and your one team has like high ranked players and the other team doesn't, and the one team's killing you, like say in team deathmatch, they're up 25 kills to 10. They have these things called Power Plays that kick in, and the team that's down gets a 1 minute advantage of all these like power-ups and stuff to try to catch back up and even out the playing field.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then the other thing is there's this new mode called three-team deathmatch, which is two-player co-op versus two teams of four. And just to see if you can win, it's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, and then there's also boosters, which gives you, like, that was the same in Uncharted 2. They give you weapon and, like, ability benefits, like being able to run faster, things like that. And there's something about Uncharted multiplayer I can't explain. I was thinking about it and preparing for the show. Like, how do I explain this? How do I – what is it about that that just – you know, why do I get bored with Call of Duty after a week? And why do I want to play Uncharted multiplayer for months? And I can't explain it. It's just fun. It's just – there's something about it that's just really fun. It has this feeling of like – even if you're not that good, you're still kind of progressing along.
That's cool.
And you're getting better. And, yeah, it's just really a great game. Overall, good experience. So I'm excited about Uncharted 3. It comes out November 1st, which is right around my birthday.
Yeah, there was one thing that I saw about it, and it was that when they first released the beta, that it was really almost broken, that there were a lot of frame rate issues, and there was like just weird stuff happening. And within 24 hours, it had a patch out that fixed a lot of the initial problems. And I think one that's really darn impressive that they were able to get something to patch that over so that gamers could get out there, explore even more, and find other issues with the game. But I really love this beta release stuff to get direct feedback from fans on what's working, what's not, what they like, what they don't. As if you're a fan of a series, to be involved like that is really, really cool. As a retro gamer, that was only something that you know we could ever, you know, dream of, because you know we were like 5 years old when the games that I love right now were coming out. So it's really cool that gamers are able to be involved in the development and give direct feedback to the developer. I think that's unbelievable. And I'm impressed with that. I think that's a cool trend in gaming. I hope that continues for a long, long time.
Well, it is cool, and you know what? What's interesting is it's something new to console gamers, like the whole beta testing. It's been out forever on PC games, but to get the chance to do it on a console is something brand new. And so, like, they obviously did it with Gears of War 3. It's something that Cliff Bleszinski is huge on, you know, because there was tons of complaints about the Gears of War 2 multiplayer. But it was after they came out, and they never really did fix it that well. And so I'm glad they did a Gears 3 beta. I'm glad they're doing an Uncharted 3 beta. And it really is neat. And like you said, the patch, I just want to give props to Naughty Dog, the developers of the Uncharted series, because they just do so much fun stuff for the fans.
That's cool.
It is cool, because like when I was playing Uncharted 2 for a long time, like through the Halloween season and all that stuff, they just did a cool thing where, like, during Halloween, like for an entire Halloween weekend, it was like a double XP weekend. You got double experience points. And at the same time, there were only two characters to choose from: a skull with like a glowing heart and a zombie. And so, like, they shut everything else down, and it was just like a Halloween weekend. It was so awesome. And so just fun stuff. I think it was during Thanksgiving weekend, every character was obese. Yeah, it, like all these fat characters, it was hilarious. And like, I felt like I was really in the game. And that's what no, my wife Amy came down, she's like, "Oh, you created yourself in the game." And I'm like, "Hun, seriously?" I was like, "It's Thanksgiving weekend," because the guy had like a shaved head, kind of a big dude. And I was like, "Yeah, but that's yeah." But it's cool. Naughty Dog is awesome. They do a lot for the fans. And so I don't know how Uncharted 3 is gonna be. The beta is really fun, and I'm hoping to get into it some more this weekend. So that's all I'm going to talk about for the modern portion this week. I had some more stuff, but we got a lot of stuff going on. So make sure you check out the Uncharted 3 beta if you have a PlayStation 3. If you want access to the beta, get the PlayStation Plus free membership for the Welcome Back program. And then also Final Fantasy 3 released on the Wii Shop channel. Pick that one up if you like Final Fantasy. It's a great retro game on a modern console. So, well, Scott, it is time for the interview.
Yes, it is. This is a very, very big guest for us to have on the show.
It really is. And as you know, we've released a review of Dungeon Siege 3 for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. And also, Vogue Nasty, our good friend, and myself have done some playthrough videos that you can see on our YouTube channel. We've really had a lot of fun with this game. I know it's getting a lot of flack out there from some different reviews, but I thought the game was fun. I gave it a positive review. I know Vogue Nasty thought it was fun as well. And so we've reached out to Obsidian Entertainment, letting them know we'd love to do an interview with them. And we actually have the project director, Richard Taylor. He goes by Rich, who's on the show with us this week. And so we just want to welcome Rich to the show. A guy who had hands-on development with Dungeon Siege 3 throughout the entire process, and he talks about it with us. So here's the interview. Welcome everyone back to a very special interview section of the Classic Elite podcast, and we are excited to have Richard Taylor, Rich Taylor, as he goes by, from Obsidian Entertainment, and he is the project director for Dungeon Siege 3, the huge dungeon crawler action RPG that just came out and was published by Square Enix. How you doing today, Rich?
Doing good, Tony.
Well, we really appreciate you deciding to come on to our show for an interview, and we just have a few questions for you, especially about the game. I've actually reviewed the game. I've had a good chance to dive into some co-op with one of my good friends, and I've really enjoyed it so far. So if you could just start out by telling us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in the gaming industry.
Yeah, you bet. You know, I grew up a gamer, going back to the Atari 2600, you know, then the Nintendo and the Genesis and the, you know, going all the way up to the current, you know, generation of consoles. I've always had them. And just going to school, I thought, well, you know, other people can make games. I think I'd like to do the same thing, and got through my computer science degree and started to look around for different opportunities. I finally got my foot in the door just as a tech support position at Blizzard,
And I was only there for a short while before I was actually able to transfer over to Black Isle. And that was towards the end of Interplay's days. You know, we internally were working on, at that time it was going to be the Fallout 3 and the Baldur's Gate 3, neither of which, of course, ever were able to come out. But then I came over pretty much right at the start of Obsidian, and I've been here ever since, pretty much working as a programmer, and then on to a lead programmer on the Neverwinter Nights expansions, and then finally finishing up with being the project director on Dungeon Siege 3. And it's just something I'd always wanted to do. I'd appreciated when I was growing up the games that I'd played and the work the developers had done to provide, you know, the hours of countless entertainment and inspiration and imagination, inspiration that I was able to get from those. And it's something that I just want to turn around and be able to do the same thing for other people as well. So I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed the game. I saw your review of it. Going to be paying more attention to your reviews. I thought it was really good.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And it's kind of interesting. We've had a lot of similar experiences growing up with, you know, some of the retro consoles that I still play from time to time. And then it's interesting that you were able to get your foot into the door really when the gaming industry, in my mind, started to boom. And I followed Obsidian Entertainment for some time. What is it like to work for such a great company in the industry? I know you've been there for quite some time, and what do you take pride in about the organization at Obsidian?
It's great people to work with here at Obsidian. A lot of creative minds, a lot of people that are very passionate about the games that we work on. The team that I had with me for Dungeon Siege 3, I loved making the game with them. I was able to, you know, ping ideas off of people, get very creative input. People would, you know, put in the hours and the time necessary to get things done to the quality that we could. You know, just and it, even a lot of times it's really easy towards the end of a project for people to kind of get burned out or get sick of thinking about it or working on it or looking at it, and just seeing that all the way up until we were completely done, the attention to detail and the focus that our team was able to maintain. It's just a lot of great people to work with here at Obsidian. I'm really happy to work on the titles that we have. I was able to start, you know, of course, with Coder 2 when Obsidian was founded, and have been here ever since, working on pretty much every title except for Alpha Protocol and Fallout New Vegas. I didn't have the opportunity to work on.
Okay, and that's just amazing that you've touched some of my favorite games of all time. I'm a huge fan of the Knights of the Old Republic series, and would love to see that come to some modern day consoles. KOTOR 2 is one of my favorite games on the Xbox. And so since you guys have touched so many great games over the years, what made you take on the Dungeon Siege franchise? I know it didn't start with Obsidian. It didn't start being published by Square Enix. How did you guys get involved in the Dungeon Siege project, and how did all that come about?
Yeah, that's a great question. What happened is we were just talking with Square Enix. We had finished up... We had just finished up the Neverwinter Nights expansions, and we knew that you know, Alpha Protocol was going to be wrapping up before too long. So we were looking kind of what to see what our next opportunity would be, and we'd started a conversation with Square Enix, and they hadn't settled on a specific IP that they had wanted to develop at that time, and until we had talked about it for a while, and then the topic of Dungeon Siege came up, and that was a game that I was personally familiar with. I enjoyed the original Dungeon Siege when it came out, so you know that was something, a title that I was quite familiar with, and we decided to pursue it, and Square was on board for it, and we went forward from there.
Well, I remember playing the first Dungeon Siege on PC, and it's been primarily a PC franchise in the past, and I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm one of those guys, I go out and I read the forums, I stay up to date, and I avoid the flaming wars, I call them, with some hardcore gamers. And, you know, I think sometimes people are just a little too critical and don't see what the fun is in a game. But, you know,
sure.
How intimidating was it to take a game that had two versions come out on the PC and then port that, you know, that franchise to consoles, but still keep the PC gamers happy and give them something to enjoy?
It's quite a challenge. It was a constant debate internally as we looked at the mechanics, the gameplay, the way the game handled, how complicated is leveling up? Is it too simple? Is it too deep? How complicated are the items? Is it too simple? Is it too deep? And I think we were able to find a great compromise with a lot of those things by looking for ways to present the information in a way that's intuitive and easy to navigate. I felt like the inventory screen with the it's able to show you at a glance what stats are going to go up from equipping this item. Is this a stat that you're interested in? I felt like features like that really help absorb what is normally considered complex PC level RPG, depth. But in a console experience where a lot of times players don't want to be bogged down with those kind of numbers and details. So that really helped on that front. I mean, we were constantly looking at, how do you tell the story? Is it going to be like a PC RPG story? We were able to look at things we'd done in Neverwinter with regards to, cinematic conversations and conditional quests and things like that, as well as our experience with Knights of the Old Republic 2 as a console title. And in terms of storytelling and whatnot, we felt that wasn't going to be much of a challenge. The tough areas were, how do you do combat? How do you do the RPG systems? And the challenges of the console are things like, you don't have a hot bar like you usually do on a PC title. You don't have a buff bar that shows, what are your current buffs, what are your current debuffs. There aren't these little things that you're used to being able to rely on a PC interface to work with on the console. And so that was quite a challenge. But we felt that finding the right balance between engaging, active, combat that wasn't relying upon a ton of runtime, you don't have to do a lot of number crunching as you're playing. You can do that while you're in the interfaces where we can present the information in an easy-to-read format. But while you're playing, we really wanted the players to be engaged in the action more so than, doing kind of making numerical decisions while they're actively playing in combat.
And that's one thing I really wanted to compliment your team on is, I'm in a place in my life right now where I am still very passionate about gaming, but, I have little kids and stuff like that, so I don't have tons of time. And I've always been attracted to the fantasy world action RPG. And one of the things I really appreciated about Dungeon Siege 3 is I felt like, I grew up playing Diablo and the first Dungeon Siege and stuff like that on PC, but I felt like for some reason that if there was a perfect way to map the controls to a controller, that you guys nailed it. And I mentioned that in my review. It just felt right. Like, it felt like I still had hot buttons. It felt like I was, still able to navigate well. And that's something I really appreciated with what your team did to get those controls to, to an actual console controller. And you mentioned the level up screen as well. It was easy to understand. I don't feel like I have to spend a lot of time in the leveling up screens, in the questing screens, in the equipment screens. I feel like it was really user-friendly to allow you to enjoy the experience but still get that role-playing game, part of it.
Yeah, I'm glad that worked well. The control scheme itself was something that we iterated on quite a bit, because obviously in a game like this, one of the things that's really important is the player having a lot of abilities. And, without having a hotbar to rely on, how do we make all these abilities accessible very quickly and easily with a gamepad? And that was something that we'd spent a lot of time trying different ideas. And then finally, I settled on the idea of, well, let's have abilities be specific to the two different stances, and then the defensive abilities being tied to blocking. And then, that way you actually have six active abilities and three defensive abilities all available from very quick button combinations. One of our, earlier ideas that got scrapped was the idea that, you would have three buttons for abilities, and then you would go into a separate screen and map your abilities to those buttons based upon which ones you actually want to have active. And I didn't really like that, because I didn't like the idea of really only being able to access three of potentially nine or maybe even more abilities at once, and having to actually go into a separate screen to be able to use these abilities just didn't sit well with me. So we finally settled on the control scheme that we have now, and once we put that in and I started trying it, I could tell that we were going in the right direction.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about co-op. I love the commercial that you all put out with the two friends going through the forest, killing zombies and monsters and all that. I guess not zombies, but it was hilarious. And you really, I've played a lot of the single player campaign. I've enjoyed it as a single-player experience, but then my friend is also reviewing the game, another fellow podcaster, and we started playing it together and putting up some gameplay videos on YouTube, and it has been a blast. Like, it's all I can think about wanting to do right now. Like, at my lunch break today from work, I got on Skype, and I was like, hey, do you have a few minutes? Let's get through another, let's tackle this next part. I mean, we've literally been playing about 2 hours a night, and it's a really fun co-op experience. And, How did you make that a central part of the game and kind of keep it where you were also creating an impressive single player but also adding co-op? And I guess one of my favorite parts is that, you know, as he journeys with me throughout my story, he doesn't lose the items and the leveling up that he's picked up. We can kind of pick up where we left off.
Sure. That was a really tough challenge to tackle. You know, finding something that was accessible, but also being, you know, able to play together. Of course, we struggled a lot with the camera. How do we share the screen with two players? How do we deal with the fact that we really don't want the players getting too far apart? How do we make that fun? And in the end, it's just a lot of iteration, a lot of ideas at the table that, you know, some that we scrapped, some that we ran with, to get to where we ended up at. But once we got to where I could pick it up and, you know, press start on the controller, start the game, and, you know, another developer here would pick up his controller and start the game and pick one of the characters, and we would take off and just start playing. And you know, standing there doing that in front of a big screen TV, we were just having a blast, and I could tell that we were really hitting the right keynotes on the co-op experience. You know, we wanted to look for ways to have the players complement each other with their abilities, you know, so we kind of added the variety to the characters with their strengths and weaknesses. One of the decisions that we made in order to enhance the co-op experience was having the players jump in to take over the companions. And that was a decision that made it so that you didn't have to jump into the game and do a lot of setup. You could get right into things. And it also made it so that you felt like you were all still part of the story. So it wasn't like, oh, well, now for some reason there's two Lucases running around, or, you know, there's two Reinhardts, or now there's four Katarinas, you know, things like that that don't really make sense from a narrative standpoint, because now you're clearly, you know, playing characters that don't make sense alongside each other. But by taking over the companions, it felt more natural, because these were characters that you know, should be journeying together, that should be going in an adventure together. And then that really worked out well for us. You know, and then we could look at the different mechanics. You know, how do these characters play alongside each other? Do they have abilities that can complement each other? Do we have proficiencies that let you support another player better than you know, maybe focusing a little less on your damage in favor of providing buffs or support for another player? And that all worked out really well.
I have to say, four Katarinas would be sweet, though, because those gun blasts are awesome. So that never gets old, just using the special power just to blast people off the screen. That's a lot of fun. So
yeah, I like the rifle shot that does the high damage. That one's really fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, talking about the future, I noticed there's some space for some DLC, some downloadable content for Dungeon Siege 3. What are you guys expecting to do for the future?
I'm sorry, you cut out for just a second there. Could you repeat that?
Yeah, that's fine. I said I noticed there's some a DLC section for Dungeon Siege 3. What kind of updates can we be expecting in the future?
Well, we're still working on things internally. For example, the PC users should be receiving a patch probably tomorrow that will be adding some key binding support and some other movement option improvements. You know, we just released a bug fix patch today for Steam as well to fix achievements. So we still have developers actively working on the title. As we look at the forums, as we look at, you know, what issues are people running into, we're constantly working on them. As far as future DLC or title updates like that, I can't speak to those right now. But you know, hopefully we'll have some news on that soon.
Okay. Well, it's exciting to hear everything that kind of went into the team behind Dungeon Siege 3, and I want to thank you for that. What's next for Obsidian Entertainment? Do you guys have anything exciting on the table that you can speak to today?
Nothing that I can announce specifically, of course. But yeah, we are definitely got some exciting things on the table. Of course, we're interested in discussing the options for, you know, another Dungeon Siege or a follow-up to it. We think there's a lot of potential to expand on that franchise. We think players would be really enjoy to see more of what we've done there. But yeah, I mean, we're certainly starting to ramp up on some new things.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all the questions I have. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we close out?
No, I'm just really glad that you enjoyed it. Like I said, for me, getting into the game industry was all about providing entertainment for people. That's what fuels my passion for it, is hearing people enjoy the work that we put into it, and I'm certainly going to pass along your compliments to the team. I know they'll be happy to hear it. But yeah, I'm really glad that you and your friend have had a good time with it.
All right. Well, we want to thank here at Classic Leap Podcast, Rich Taylor, the project director for Dungeon Siege 3, for coming on our show again. And we hope you just have a wonderful rest of the day, Rich. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Take care.
Uh-huh. Bye.
All right. Well, Tony, that was a really, really good interview. Some unbelievable questions there. And I love how you really dug into trying to pull a PC franchise into the consoles. So awesome, awesome interview. Rich, thanks a lot for coming on the show. Really cool. And I do want to mention one thing. Our friends, the Paranerds, also did a really good written review about Dungeon Siege 3. And they talked about it on their most recent episode. I think that was 61, I think. But Kevin goes into detail in his thoughts about Dungeon Siege and what he liked about the game. So, Tony, I've got to ask you. I've watched your playthroughs with Vogue Nasty, and you've played this game a lot. So what is something that has kept you coming back to it? Because you played it a lot even before we knew that we were going to have Rich on the show. So what is something that really, you know, keeps you coming back to it?
Well, I think I could go into this game having an unbiased opinion because I haven't played much of the first two. I played the first one a lot, but not the second one.
Okay.
And so I think sometimes people go out there and they just want to play games to critique them and try to give an opinion that's negative for some reason. I don't know why. I go in as a gamer just wanting to have fun, and this game gave me fun. That's what keeps drawing me back is the community aspect. It has a great co-op feature. You know, Vogue Nasty and I were friends, and so I don't have to play with a random person online, which I know can make a difference for some people, but we're playing through the game together, and it's a lot of fun to do that. The controls are great from the PC over to the console, and so for me, just being able to play a great control game with a good friend is what keeps me coming back, and, nice. And we'll play it through till we beat it. So.
That's cool. Well, Tony, it was a fun interview to listen to. I wish I could have been a part of it. But I probably just would have sat there and listened. I don't have a copy of this game yet, but I don't know. Watching you guys play through it, it seems pretty exciting. So if I can find someone that will want to play through the 360 version with me, I might have to pick up a copy of that. It looks pretty cool. So, yeah, Tony, great interview. Rich, thanks a lot for coming on the show. You're welcome back anytime. So anyways, Tony, it's about time for some retro stuff. How's that sound?
Let's break into it, man.
All right. Well, actually, this isn't retro. This was one modern thing that I wanted to bring up to you just to pick your brain about a little bit. It's the fact that there was an article released that there's a new development tool that's going to allow developers to port 360 games to iOS, web services, Android, OS X, that kind of stuff. So I wanted to ask you real quick, are there any games off the top of your head that you think would be fun to port from a 360 to a handheld device?
I don't know. I think there's like companies like Gameloft have already done a really good job of bringing the shooter franchises and things like that to the iOS device. But, you know, I would like to see, of course, at any time, would like to see any exclusives from consoles come over to the iOS device, you know, any of the Halo games, anything. I know that there's a Metal Gear Solid Touch, which really sucked in my mind. I would love to see a Metal Gear Solid game come over, like a real one, real Castlevania game, any of those like exclusives, if they could come over.
That's cool.
I always think it's cool. So I don't know. You know, I haven't looked at that technology. I'm definitely interested in checking it out. But it sounds interesting because I think after games like Infinity Blade and Dead Space iPad came out, that people are really starting to take serious the iOS and Android markets for gaming. So
yeah, man. What I'm really keeping my fingers crossed for are developers like Mommy's Best Games. You know, some of the indie developers that I really like a lot, I'm hoping that some of them might get a hold of this so I can play some Shoot One Up and some Explosion Aid and stuff like that. Just because I love the indie games on the Xbox Live Arcade. So just I would love to see them get a hold of that because I would buy those games again for another dollar or $2 or whatever to take it with me on my phone. I've got an Android device now, so it would be cool to be able to play some Shoot One Up when I'm bored. So I don't know. Hopefully some of the smaller developers will get a hold of that and bring some really, really good shooters and stuff that are on the Live Arcade. So yeah, just wanted to see what your thoughts there are, and getting some exclusive content out there. Like you had mentioned with like Metal Gear and stuff. I think that's a cool idea. I didn't think about that. My initial thought was racing. get the accelerometer going, because I kind of like the racing games when they show up on these types of portable devices. So,
well, I think those devices are made for the types of games you're describing. So I think that would be the obvious choice to start with for a lot of these companies, just get some of the indie developers over. So, but when you did say I'd buy that for a dollar, I had to.
RoboCop.
I'd buy that for another dollar. Well, that, every time we mention a dollar or anything, that one guy retweets it. I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah, no. If you say something about RoboCop,
that's it. I just can't believe there's some guy out there, you know, waiting and finding the RoboCop tweets.
Assume that it's got to be a bot, right?
I don't know. He comes home at night and he's like, "Who talked about RoboCop?
It's me, actually. I always get made fun of because everything I can relate to RoboCop in some way or another. So." It's just a weird thing about me. I don't know. Things remind me of RoboCop all the time. Maybe it's because we grew up too close to Detroit.
I don't know. I just love watching that YouTube video. I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah.
Back to retro.
So, yes, back to retro, Tony. I haven't really been playing a lot of retro games recently, but I've had retro stuff on my mind. And I saw an article on geekgadget.com. And they had a link to Etsy.com, E-T-S-Y, and it was Etsy.com is a site that's selling Atari and NES cartridges. It looks like among a lot of other things, but one of the sections has Atari and NES cartridges that have been turned into desk clocks. And they look awesome. They look really cool. They don't have like a digital interface. It's not like the like the LED or LCD display. They actually have moving hands. And there were some really cool titles in there. I saw a Final Fantasy. I saw a Super Mario 2. There were some ETs in there from Atari, Asteroids, Pac-Man. There was probably a total of like 50, 60 games that you could get in a clock version. Now, I saw the prices ranging from anywhere from like maybe 18 to 35 bucks, and I didn't look to see if there was shipping or anything, but I don't know if I would buy one of these for that kind of a price range, but it looks really, really cool. And Tony, if you could have any retro game cartridge that you would turn into a clock so that it would be displayed, what's one that you would have?
I think because it would be the most notable, like have the original Super Mario Brothers on Nintendo.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think just because it would be, you know, people would walk in the house and be like, oh yeah, I love Mario. You know, most people can tie back to that game somehow. So.
Yeah, I picked a similar one. Legend of Zelda was one that stood out for me just because it had the gold cart.
Yeah.
I also think any of the Tengen carts would be kind of cool too, just because they look a little off. So... those are a couple that I would definitely pick, but I think that'd be kind of a cool thing to have, on your desk at work and whatnot. So
I would much rather have the Mario Brothers cart that's an actual console. That guy that we talked about that one time.
Oh my god, yeah, that would be awesome.
That's freaking sweet. I need to learn how to make that.
So. We'll just start by making a clock. It's a good first step.
Right.
And this got me thinking a little bit just about. Just the fact that we're adults, and I still like, I guess, kids stuff to a certain extent. Like, for example, I still want that pillowcase that looks like an NES controller. I'm sure that my girlfriend will not go for that, but I still want one. And even if I have to, pin it up on a wall, I would do that. Because have you seen those pillowcases?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I love that stuff. So, I don't know. Do you feel silly with the fact that we still like that kind of stuff? I mean,
not Not at all, because I think there's tons of people in our generation that do, and occasionally I'll meet like the guy, we'll have a couple over for dinner or something, and the guy will be like, "Oh, you play games, like, and have no interest," and I'm like, "I think he's lame."
Yeah, no, I'm with you there.
I'm like, like Daniel Tosh says, "I can't help it. You gave up on your dreams," you know, like. Keep playing games. It brings fun to my life, you know. If people want to call it dorky, nerdy, I don't care. You know, it's like me liking Star Trek. I don't care. You know,
Star Trek's sweet though.
Would I go to a conference in a second? Heck yes, I would.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. No, it was weird that I picture myself being 50 and 60 and wanting that stupid pillowcase.
Hey, I'm Kevin.
I'm Rooster.
From Paranerds.com, and you're listening to the Classic Leap Podcast.
Throughout the year, periodically, I know that just about everybody's heard of the Angry Video Game Nerd, and every now and again, I get in the mood to watch his videos. I've seen all of them a couple times, probably, and every now and again, I just get in the mood to watch one. So I'm watching a revisited episode where he does a kind of a second look at the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video game.
Okay.
The original one that was on the NES.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a game that I had as a kid, and I loved it. That was one of my, I don't want to say an all-time favorite, but maybe like a all-time most played. Like, I sunk a lot of time into that, but I never was able to beat it. So... I'm watching the Angry Video Game Nerd, I'm seeing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I'm like, you know what, I've never beat that game. And I remember it being so hard that I don't really have any desire to go back and try to play that game through all the way. So what I did was I went on to watch a speed run. I just wanted to see how somebody approached that game and was able to beat it. And it got me thinking, because there's times where I've been stuck in video games, and I've actually gravitated more towards looking at a speed run or like a video tutorial versus trying to read through and scroll through an FAQ.
Okay.
Have you ever done that where you've relied on video versus like written FAQs?
I haven't.
You haven't?
I haven't. No, and I don't like to use FAQs very much. I remember.
Yeah, but you do.
Oh, yeah, occasionally. I mean, but I don't beat a lot of games anymore. I think the last time I used a FAQ was Metal Gear Solid 4. There was just one boss, like one boss out of the entire freaking game that I couldn't figure out on myself. So, yeah. And I had to go look it up. So,
Have you watched any speedruns recently, or have you ever watched those before?
I have watched them for fun. I think a couple of old retro games I played as a kid. I think I watched Ninja Gaiden and...
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden, and then also a couple Mario ones I've watched. So
there was one that I saw here really recently, and it was Battletoads, and it was two-player Battletoads. Did you play that, right? Battletoads?
Yeah, it's a co-op, right?
Yeah, it's like freaking impossible. Yeah.
No, I mean, I've played it with my brother a lot as a kid. We rented it. I doubt we probably got very far. I barely remember it, so.
Yeah, no, these, I'll try to find a link to it. It was on YouTube. I saw Craig from Screw Attack mention it, so I went and I'm like, really? There was two guys that went through and they beat Battletoads, and I'm pretty sure that they didn't die, and they barely got hit ever. And I know that they didn't use any continues or anything. It was like remarkable, and they got so much. I didn't realize that. I never even got to the halfway point of that video game, actually.
It's all perspective, because I look at your Contra video and I'm like, I can't do that. So
but my Contra video is nothing compared to like Dinky Dana and people like that who are just like masters at it. I'm pumped I can just get through it. Watching these two dudes in Battletoads, it's cool because they each take a slightly different approach and actually it might just be them showing off the fact that they can do anything in the game at any time. But like the wave race scenes and the, I guess it's like a wave racer, those little hoverboard things. It's cool to watch how they each go through it and then sync up right at the perfect time to nail jumps and avoid anything. It's incredible. So I'm going to try to post a link to that so that people can give that a watch. It's like really, really impressive. So, Tony, that's all I wanted to talk about. I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit about, you know, still liking dorky stuff, you know, still really loving that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was interested to see what sort of games that you'd want to pick, from a, you know, from a clock perspective, I guess, just because I wasn't sure if you would pick a game that you were really proud that you beat, or, you know, a game that, like, you desperately wanted and, you know, you were able to get a copy of it, so you have, like, really strong nostalgia to it. But, no, you went with a cart that everyone would recognize, so it would be a cool conversation piece. So I like that idea.
Yep.
I went with gold just because it would stick out. So.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you like bling, so.
Yeah, I'm about as flashy as they come.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's all that I have for this week. So, for anybody who's not real familiar, this is the time where we give some quick shout outs to any of our friends and sponsors of the show. So, Tony, you want to help me out with that?
Sure thing. We want to thank Aver Media and Hapog, both who have sent us the high-definition recording devices for our reviews. You can check out our reviews on youtube.com/classicleet. Also want to thank Scenic7PR and Gamersgate and J2 Games. So Gamersgate is the best place to buy PC games online. Scenic7PR is our good friend Triverse, yep, who represents lots of our friends in from a PR perspective. And then also J2 Games, you can get 20% off with the code CLEET, CL337, 20% off your entire order. So lots of great deals on J2 Games and Gamersgate. Check both those sites out.
Yep, and then we definitely need to thank our guests for this show. Glitchedout.com, Seb, and Critical Failure, thank you very much for coming on the show. You did a much better job of articulating what the site's all about than Tony and I would have done, so I really appreciate that. And then a huge, huge thank you to Rich from Dungeon Siege. Just unbelievable to have him on, Tony. And you got some great information. I know that our fans are really going to love that, because we do have a lot of modern gaming listeners, or people that at least keep their you know, their ear to the grindstone when it comes to modern gaming. So, you know, because of that, that's just an unbelievable treat for our listeners to have Rich on the show. So
for sure.
So, all right. Well, that wraps up episode 56. Thank you, everyone, very much for listening. And we will see you next week for 57.